what's the problem, first of all, that we're trying to solve? And then from there, what are the outcomes that we expect to generate? So give me the problem statement, don't give me the solution. And then what are the outcomes that we're trying to drive? And then we can start to layer in, all right, well, these are the features that we're gonna need.
Welcome to Go to Market Mavericks, the podcast where we go deep on innovative, contrarian, and effective approaches to go to market with the hands-on operators behind them. Mitch, thanks for jumping on the program. Mitch is the director in business systems of revenue and revenue operations director at G2. Has a wealth of knowledge to share with us. So super excited to have you. Thanks for joining.
Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate you having me. Started out and I was in logistics as kind of my first job, and I did a lot of account management, assisting just generally with one of our largest customers there. And so I got my beak wet there, just learning how to manage different systems, operate within those, understanding what customers need, right, how to support them. And so that it was a great foundation that took me a number of years there. And then after I kind of run my course, I actually moved out to Boulder, Colorado with my now wife and on a whim. And so got a job over at Logrhythm, a security intelligence company. And that was really where I started in support as operations. So I was support operations manager there. And I got to understand how that business worked, right, within that department, and figure out, hey, what are the things that this team needs? Because in support, often it's kind of the forgotten child. And so there was a number of different processes that needed improvements, systems that maybe weren't well-maintained, data structure, data quality. And so as I found these areas that need improvement, I just, you know, stuck my head in and started to learn, right? And so through that time, I created enough experience to where they were like, hey, you're pretty good at this. How would you like to help us transition from, we were using a tool called Parature at the time, to Service Cloud, Salesforce. And so once we got into that whole process, I loved the idea of migrating tools, understanding where you have gaps in your current process and how you could start to layer that into new systems and things like that. So that opened me up to Salesforce administration, tooling in general. And so then I started to learn a lot about reporting and KPIs and all of that. And so it started to culminate into business intelligence and helping drive the business forward and making the right decisions there. Then into my next job, I ended up getting into really the RevOps role for the first time. And I was doing a lot of the system work, doing, you know, quotas, comp, territory management, procuring tools, getting into all that. So I got a wealth of knowledge through that opportunity. And then that segued into where I'm at now here at G2, where I'm director of business systems. I manage the team that leads and owns our Salesforce, as well as all of the other kind of ancillary tools that connect into our CRM. So those are mostly in the go-to-market space. And so through that kind of journey now, I've been able to just stack experience on top of it. And now here we are, right? Really understanding the market with G2 and where we sit, as well as just the different tools that we own and operate. And lots of things that are coming into the market now that we're paying attention to.
Mm-hmm. I have to ask a follow-up question to the whole like RevOps title, because I feel like you're the nice way of saying you're old is like your experience, you've seen a lot, and I feel like RevOps wasn't a term probably when you started. And so do you remember the point where it's like RevOps, oh, that's a thing, like that's what I want to do? And did that come into mind, or can you recall like when you like noticed that actually becoming a thing?
Yeah, and I don't know that it was called RevOps for a while for me. It was operations, right, was more so the broad term. And then when you started getting into specifically helping amplify the sales processes and tools related to those teams, that's when I started to hear a little bit more. But a lot in relation to just like systems management and then the processes that touch your different systems. And so I think eventually I just realized, hey, this is actually called RevOps. And so that was my lead into that term.
Yeah. And then when do you think you're going to change your title to go-to-market engineer?
Yeah, exactly. That's the new rage is go-to-market engineer. I mean, I think it makes a whole lot of sense, especially with the increase in AI and, of course, how you're going to leverage that in your tools. So you have to be able to to understand how to make that work better. And that's ultimately like engineering prompts and making sure that the tool produces the outputs that you want, right? You know, the outputs are only as good as the inputs that you have. So I like that title for sure. You know, we'll see if it ever sticks. We're in the still the battle, I think, of like, is it go to market? Is it RevOps? I don't know. I don't want to open that can of worms.
Well, getting us off track a little bit here. So, you know, getting back into kind of the topic we wanted to cover here is, I think what's really unique about your background and just like G2 in general is like you're in the seat of RevOps, of business systems. You're evaluating software, and the company you work for is like the review site for all of the software that's out there that we buy. And so it's very meta, the role that you're in. I guess the question is like, can you like speak to that? Like, how do you make sense of that? Do you get like access to things or privilege to things that other people don't? Tell us a little bit about just being at G2 and then also being the software evaluator at G2 as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Dangerous to put my face, I guess, out on the internet as the guy who buys software for G2. But my favorite joke is G2 is the place you go for software, and we certainly have drank our own Kool-Aid on that regard. So it's been an amazing experience, honestly, just being so close to so many different software and tech companies. Godard, our CEO, knows basically everybody in the SaaS world. So I get the opportunity to see a number of different demos and different tools. And again, with new emerging technology, AI being the most recent, getting a chance to just scope out what are the tools that are out there. And of course, I use G2 to do a lot of research. I love hearing the voice of the customer. I think reviews are a great way. If you go and buy dinner, you're almost always going to check Google reviews, right? Which ones are the highest stars? But then there's that authenticity aspect of like, I just don't want to read the best reviews. I want to read the in-between, and I want to read the bad and understand, all right, is it bad because maybe the use case didn't quite fit? Is it bad because they were using an integration that is specific to either we do or we don't have it, right? So that's a really big one for me. And then because of the network that we sit in here, I have the opportunity to talk to a number of different folks. So I love to bounce ideas off my peers. Reading through LinkedIn, there's some great content creators out there that I love to just to hear their perspective on. But yeah, given that I get to see all of these different tools, making these decisions can often be really, really challenging because, you know, we have got a lot of different relationships, as I mentioned. And so I always anchor to, hey, G2, it has its own, you know, reviews and rankings and everything like that. But I'm making decisions based on the business processes at hand and what's going to drive the greatest ROI for us. And so, of course, reviews, where you're positioned in G2, plays a role. But at the end of the day, if it doesn't quite meet our specific needs and where we sit, then, you know, I will probably not entertain it quite as much.
Yeah. This is kind of like a funny question as a follow-up to that is, you know, when you're... me as a marketer, like trying to get case studies across the line, you know, it's a legal hurdle sometimes where it's like, oh, can we use a logo? Can we not use a logo? Are they going to quote something? I'm wondering if that ever like comes up, because like if you essentially like do your own customer story with someone, it's almost like your reputation's up on the line because like G2 putting its stamp on something, which again is like business use case based for you. And it's not like saying like, oh, this is the best tooling out there. It depends on your own use case. So how does that work? Is the legal process, or just like is that a challenge that you come across? You're just like, maybe have a stance of like, we're not going to put our logo anywhere other than our own site.
Yeah, you nailed it. I mean, we're a marketplace, right? And I don't work in research. I don't work in any of those areas. So I'm pretty disconnected from that. And so what we always have to say with our vendors is, hey, we can't be a logo you use on the website. You know, we can't do named case studies, potentially anonymous and things like that. But to your point, it carries so much more weight when you know the who, the what, and just some of the specifics around the case study. But what we do offer here, at least what I like to anchor to, is we're very tech forward, as I mentioned. You know, we've had a lot of tools that have come through G2. Our sales team is incredibly savvy at using these tools. So we love to be a partner in terms of design and providing feedback. So whether it's a design partner or on like customer advisory boards, things like that, we can provide some input. We're very forward thinking, I think, in that regard. But yeah, we have to stay away from the public stuff just to keep those two things separate. Because again, G2 and what it does from a public and marketing standpoint is very different than what we do from like an internal perspective. And so you got to keep those separate, and it's definitely a delicate balance. But yeah, there are other things that you can do, I think, that can benefit the vendor that you're purchasing from.
Yeah. Interesting. I just wanted some inside baseball there. And if anyone's trying to get a customer story, their hopes are ruined, I think, from G2, that is. I wanted to get into like a little bit of like your actual like hands-on experience purchasing software. And maybe you could like draw upon a recent experience of just like the last technology you purchased or last software you purchased. You don't have to name it, but curious, like if you want to just like walk us through kind of the steps of like, What was the initiative? Like what was going into that decision? If you can like start there, I can lead you across along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. So right now we're looking for tools, I would say, that are going to help us see around corners, increase efficiency, right, of reps or augment a process in some way, shape, or form, trying to get rid of some of the manual work that we're doing. So creating better continuity across our systems, improving data quality, right? Those are things that are always on, I would say. But now, again, with advent of AI, that was where we turned our attention, is like, can we do anything? Agentic AI, I think, is really interesting, right, in terms of how you can train it, the actions that it can take. And so from a support perspective, the idea of deflection to me is kind of antiquated, I would say, right, at this point. Like, that's not a good customer experience. Oh, we deflected the customer. Like, we're not Dikembe Mutombo, right? We want to create a positive experience. And in fact, when something goes wrong, that means you're reaching out to support. So when that thing is wrong and you improve and you you fix it, right, and you give them a great experience, that's a great way to get you know, positive impact from your customers, right? Word of mouth and those sorts of things. So how you create a very seamless experience to get your customers the information that they need and help them solve their problems, right? And so we looked at different what do you want to call it, like agent, you know, Agentforce is like an example. It's the biggest rage that Salesforce has. So it's that same type of category that we were looking into. So what other types of tools exist out there that help? And clearly, there are a number that are out there. And so we went through that whole process and understood, all right, well, what tools are out? It's a newer market, and what we're trying to do is improve the speed with which we can react to cases. We're solving more problems more quickly. And so we ended up going through a very robust process, looking at a number of different vendors, you know, making sure that the technology integrates with our current infrastructure. And then we ended up making a decision at the end of the day.
Yeah. And then are you, like, drilling in there, are you the one that's like, okay, you have this charter, someone on the support team or like the you know, revenue leaders, like, okay, there's an area for agentic support here, which is going to make us much more efficient and also improve the customer experience. Like, Mish, you go out and go find something for me and like bring three options to the table. And so you're the one that's kind of hunting for it, or is someone bringing stuff to you? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, great question. So I would say it's a mix of both, because sometimes I am the one who identifies, hey, we have a gap in what we're doing. We could, a tool could solve this, or we have a tool today that's not quite meeting the needs. So I will go and investigate and evaluate, hey, what are the options out there in the market? Can I consolidate this use case into one of our existing tools? Is there a best-in-class tool that has come out? Cost, of course, is a big one, right? You got to check out budgets, and everything are getting tighter and tighter. And so really making sure you have a clear ROI story. But then in this case, it was actually brought to us by our support and customer success teams, as they identified that as an opportunity. And as we continue to scale, right, making sure that we can do so in a manner where we allow our teams to focus in the areas that they can add the most value. And so, for this one, they said, hey, we've got a few of these tools. This is what we're looking at. And can you take a look and see if there's anything that we're missing? Make sure from like a technical standpoint that we're not overlooking anything. And ultimately, when we want to press play on this, is it going to integrate well? What does the cost of ownership look like, you know, from your team and everything like that? So it comes from both angles, depending on the situation.
from your perspective, like what are the things you're looking for there? Like what is the checklist of items in the RFP where you're like, oh, it must integrate with this. It must like, do you have like a list of just like items where you're like, okay, if this doesn't exist, then we can't purchase the software, like throw it out. Do you have a kind of a methodology or process around that?
Yeah, I mean, security is a big one. That's more so in the IT world, but like having things like SSO or MFA, clearly table stakes at this point. But integrating with your key systems, your CRM, if you've got, you know, like a call recording or something like that, you likely will want some sort of integration with that. Maybe your data lakes, right? Having it integrate there so that the data can pipe into whatever data lake or data tool that you're using, and ultimately leveraging it in like a business intelligence tool of some sort. So those are key ones. Really, it's a matter of how does what's the problem, first of all, that we're trying to solve? Like, that's my number one question. And then from there, what are the outcomes that we hope to or that we expect to generate? So give me the problem statement, don't give me the solution. And then what are the outcomes that we're trying to drive? And then we can start to layer in, all right, well, these are the features that we're going to need, and these are the integrations that are going to be necessary as a result.
These are the requirements needed to like actually make that outcome happen, kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah. And then post-purchase, how is that evaluated? You're kind of evaluating this software you're purchasing off of, you know, is it going to meet these objectives? Like, is it going to, you know, improve efficiency or like generate revenue or whatever? Like, 3 months down the line, are you the one who's like, hey, like, we're doing this thing, but it's not what we said it was. It's not getting the right kind of adoption. We have the struggle with this integration. Like I'm going to say, like, let's make the decision to like cut this software, or is that on the person who championed it? Like, how does that process work?
Yeah, I would say it's in tandem. You can have a conflict of interest sometimes when the person who purchased the tool, is kind of monitoring it themselves. So you want to have both, but the onus is, I would say, on the primary champion to collect some of this data, but then I will confirm, corroborate that. But usage metrics and things like that are absolutely things that I key into. You know, who's logging in, which features are we using? How are the integrations and everything working? Are we able to log events from this in a way where we can report on them well? And then tying it back, yeah, to certain outcomes. So if you're saying, hey, we bought this tool to reduce churn, let's take a look after 90 days, right? How are we starting to see that that be impacted? I also like to try to figure out ways to attribute, which can be somewhat difficult, right? If you have like an enrichment tool, just because you pulled in a new contact for the account and you closed the deal, does that mean any enrichment tool did it? Like, it can be tricky to say for certain, but you can start to at least drive some correlation between those. All right, there was a touch from the system on this account, and you know, this is the outcomes of this account. So like gifting and everything like that. That's a common one where just because you sent a gift to the account and they expanded doesn't necessarily mean, but I think it's an important data point to start to collect. And then you start to compile the larger picture together and say, all right, on average, we're seeing when these tools touch these types of accounts, you know, and so you're just trying to tell the story, I would say.
Yeah, I heard that that's why a lot of like the last mile or last touch attribution tools actually are stickier, is because like they're very clear tie into like this thing happened and then like this outcome happened. So like a dialer or an email sequencer tool or like a LinkedIn DM tool is like gonna get a lot of credit because like that's where the exchange happens. So I guess you have to like kind of subvert that bias in some way, and that's kind of what you're trying to accomplish there.
Absolutely right. Yeah. I mean, it's a funnel, right? In a lot of ways, similar to, you mentioned in marketing. So you almost have a funnel too, in terms of the activities that start at the top that yields to your closed deal. In the same way, you're saying, hey, at the end, you might be sending them, you know, an email and an e-signature document. And so you might say, oh, well, our e-signature document is the number one correlate to close one, right? But it's a larger part of the story. And so understanding all of those inputs and then trying to provide or to place some sort of value on those, I think that's where my job gets tricky, but it's a lot of fun too, to determine those things.
Yeah, I know with so much software, in the market, and who knows how many tools you'll have at G2, but like each one of those is probably like trying to raise their hand, like buy for some sort of attribution. And I bet they're like, if you're like any other company, I'm sure they're like in different data silos. It's like not everything's in Salesforce, not everything's in your data warehouse. They have their own reporting and analytics. So like, what do you use to kind of like, I feel like RevOps role is somewhat like getting the whole purview of how things are going and getting like visualization across the end-to-end funnel. And so like, what is your methodology for, what tool do you use for that? Like, how do you make sense of all that? Is it data warehouse? Is it BI? Is it Salesforce? What's your process?
Yeah, we're in the process now of actually collecting all of our usage data from our different tools and then creating it in our BI tool to create some sort of a scorecard. And you correlate like usage of different tools back to the individuals and then their performance. And I think there's two lanes, right? You have the data aspect, but then there's also the anecdotal feedback. So I think that's really critical. You can see some usage data is just not accessible. That's my plug to different vendors certainly is if you can focus there, right, and you have really strong data that you can pull out and understand how people are using it, which features, it just gives a lot of clarity then to the end users on, all right, this is where we need to double down. This is where we need to make sure like everyone is using this particular feature because our top reps are using it, and look at how successful they've been. But then I need to know from those top reps, how are you using it? Why is this is successful? Maybe it's a false positive too. Like, well, I have to click here first before I navigate to the thing that actually really is valuable. So I like to combine the two, and we do like NPS surveys on our tools. How are you feeling about X, Y, and Z tool at this point? And that helps me to say, all right, do we need to do additional enablement, or this tool is actually something that maybe we can cut?
Yeah. Is it fair to say in a lot of cases that the product in itself is the systems that you're building, and then your customer is actually like the reps, like the go-to-market team? Is that fair?
Yeah, like custom, like my customers, you mean?
Your customer, yeah, as a rev officer, your customer is the reps, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. My dad said this to me a long time ago, and so I've stolen it, but everybody's a consultant and everybody's a salesperson, right? So I try to act like that and instill that in my team of like, we're really consultants to the business is what I would consider it. There are stakeholders. And so, yeah, my job is to make sure that their NPS of the way that we distribute our infrastructure is as high as possible. And so I need to understand how they use it, and I need to get their feedback, and then I need to use data to kind of corroborate the stories that I'm hearing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm gonna switch to like last few questions here. Hopefully they don't get you in trouble and like blow up your inbox. Okay, so what is your, like, I want to get into KPIs and like, what would make you actually say like, oh, that's compelling. Like, I want to take a demo or a call, and trying to get a sense of like what your priorities are, and if it's like KPI based or initiative based, and then I'll get into how that changes over time. But first, let's start with just like, what's the thing that's pressing right now?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'd say it's changed, right? Like maybe a year ago, 2 years ago, it would be, oh, you could decrease response times by 50% or whatever, like those types of things would catch your eye. Now I feel like I see that so often. So the personalized messaging around, hey, based on an interview that Godard did or something on this podcast, I heard that you all are focused on this particular initiative. Here's why we've been successful in accomplishing the goals of what this initiative is supposed to drive. Like that to me is far more compelling. I'm going to see that email and be like, all right, maybe I should take a look. So those initiatives are obviously going to drive particular metric outcomes, but I'm going to key into that more because it means you understand me, you understand my business and what my priorities are, as opposed to, you know, hey, you can see 20% increase in ARR or something. It just, that doesn't catch my eye quite as much these days.
Yeah. Yeah. And then in terms of like what you're looking for in those types of outbounds, or even maybe just like a marketing ad, for example, are you looking more at like, as like the technical person, are you looking more for like, oh, this is the innards of like how this works with like a technical like demo? Or are you looking more for like, oh, here's a customer that looks like you and here's their story? Or like, what's the compelling offer that's going to get you to be like, oh, that's interesting. That like catches my eye.
Yeah, I do think the customers like you is a good one, but that to me is a little bit further on down the sales cycle where I'm saying, hey, you know what, this does seem to meet my needs. I'd love to talk to somebody in a similar industry, similar company size, right, depending on what the tool is meant to do. So I think what you said first is more so what interests me, and that's again more the personalized piece and why your tool is going to elevate the initiative that we're running, or the key focus areas that our CEO, CRO have mentioned in different forums, whether it's a LinkedIn post or something like that, right? Like that's because that's probably something that I'm talking about in different meetings. Like, hey, how are we going to accomplish this in next fiscal year? And then it's related back to an initiative that we're doing. Cool. Well, here's how this tool could help solve it. The other aspect too is consolidation, right? Is a key one. To me, consolidation is helpful, but it's almost how you integrate is more important than having like a single tool that does all of the things. Not to say that like that isn't valuable, less overhead for my team and administrating tools, but if you can integrate really well, I think partnerships is actually more of the key than saying, hey, I have one company that does 20 things and maybe 18 of them are subpar, right? Just to consolidate for purposes of consolidation, I think is something that I try to challenge a little bit, is to say like, well, if these three things integrate really well together into a single interface, then does it matter that they're three different solutions? Maybe not.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Say more about that. Like, is it because you already have these integrations in place and you're looking for that, and it's just like, oh, we already have this system set up, so if it integrates well between like a system that I'm considering for consolidation or what or to purchase, and it works with this other thing that our team is already using, then like, why do I need to consolidate? Is that the mentality, or is it like, are you thinking of like, oh, if I buy this, I'm also going to integrate it with this other separate thing? Like, I'm curious how you think through that. Yeah.
Yeah, if I think it goes back to what's the goals, right? What's the problem that you're trying to solve? And if the problem that you're trying to solve is that we have too many interfaces that we're toggling between, okay, well then that doesn't necessarily only mean that I need to buy another feature from a tool that I currently have if that feature doesn't measure up. Because if I could buy another one that integrates and maybe everything is planted inside of your CRM, well then that's one interface, right? I consolidated down by doing that. So as long as I don't have to toggle in between, right, or have multiple tabs open as a rep, then I think it's meeting the need there. So integrating with the tools that we have is super important, I would say. But where does it land? Where do they work? Where do they spend their time? And so sometimes you can have tools that execute things but are done in the background. So like that's something that's always really, really powerful versus, hey, you got to go to our website or you got to go to our app in order to do any of the actions, that you want to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome stuff. That kind of brings us to the end. I feel like it covers the topic we wanted to get to. Is there anything else on your end that you wanted to mention? Any plugs you want to throw in there before signing off here?
I think just like when I reflect back on how we started, right, of the RevOps journey, I think there's a few key qualities that are just critical that have helped me in my career. And number one is, we used to say this at Logarithm, so I steal it, an API and WTF. And so API, everyone's heard, I think, assume positive intent. And WTF as well, that's fun. And I think in a RevOps role or in a systems role, there's so much things that come and can hit you, and people are bringing you problems, right? And so it can feel sometimes like, hey, the system isn't working. And it's like, well, I implemented that system, so are you yelling at me? Like, no, assume positive intent and assume that, hey, they want to extract value from this and they see you as an important resource to do that. So starting off the conversation with curiosity, interest and excitement is the best way to can get to the other side of that, as opposed to being defensive and want to deflect and say, well, I did it this way because, right? Like, I'm less interested in the past and more interested in what is it that you're trying to solve and how do we get there? And then that's fun. Things are going to break, right? Things are going to happen and it's easy to get frustrated. And for sure, I don't want to tell you to not, feel your emotions, but, trying to take that perspective of like, all right, well, what could we do as a result of this and approaching it from kind of some excitement, I think is really powerful. It's helped me in a lot of ways. And at the end of the day, our job is to build our brand. And the best way that you do that is people want to work with you because they know that you're going to listen to them, hear them out, and not poo-poo on their problems and be a creative solution for their challenges.
Awesome. That's helpful for advice for me today. I have a fire to put out right after this call. And so I'll approach it from a lens of, well, that's fun and learn from
exactly.
it. So I really appreciate
that.
You appreciate bet. It, Mitch, and appreciate your time. And thanks so much for joining us. And see you next time.
Thanks for having me.